Get two or more rowers in a room and the conversation goes from normal topics like work or weather to long, pointless stories about boats, blisters, oars, grips, ergs, feathers, workouts, catches, releases, recoveries, splits, seats, strokes, slides, starts, settles, sprints, and whether the water was really flat or not. From there, it usually progresses to what went wrong on the last row, what might go wrong on the next row, whose fault it was and or will be. At some point, the rowers will hold out their hands and compare calluses. If you're really unlucky, this could be followed by several minutes of head bowing reverence as one of them recounts the perfect row where it all felt easy. I'm Bonnie Garmus, and you're listening to Steady State Podcast, Sit Ready.
Hey, I'm Tara Morgan. I live on Vashon Island in Washington, founded Seize the Oar Foundation in 2013, am fanatic about coaching Learn to Row, and I believe pair is the best boat.
And I'm Rachel Friedman. I live in Washington, D.C., am the owner of Row Source, the founder of the Alliance of Women Rowing Coaches, and I can't row a single in a straight line. Between us, we have nearly 40 years of rowing, coaching, and coxing experience.
Here at Steady State Podcast, we're fascinated by backstories, the real-life experiences on and off the water that make people the rowers, coaches, and coxswains they are today. From indoor rowing to flatwater masters to coastal and ocean adventurers, we celebrate you, who represent the global humanity of our sport. Together, we disrupt and expand the narrative about rowing culture.
If you're a first-time listener, welcome. If you're coming back for another episode, thanks for being here.
Thanks to our patrons, whose support makes this podcast possible. Join our team for as little as $5 a month at steadystatenetwork.com/Patreon.
And Live to Row Studios, where rowing is for everybody. Their expert coaches lead live indoor rowing classes and training camps every day of the week. We're currently training in their endurance camp. Get in touch with the coach for your free introductory session at livetorowstudios.com.
When Bonnie Garmus learned to row, she was intrigued, as she says, by the skinny boat, the long oars, and how, quote-unquote, easy and graceful it looked. She got hooked and was a competitive master's rower for years before an offhand comment during a business meeting prompted her to begin writing her first novel, Lessons in Chemistry. The book has been turned into a hit Apple TV Plus series, and everyone wants to talk with Bonnie about the book's main character, Elizabeth Zott. We're turning the tables to ask Bonnie about the role rowing plays in her life and in the book, which has been on the New York Times bestseller list for nearly 100 weeks.
My name is Bonnie Garmus. I learned to row in about 1993 or so at Mount Baker Rowing Club. I've also rowed for Green Lake Rowing Club and Pocock Rowing Club. When I'm not doing rowing-related things, I'm swimming.
You learned at Mount Baker? I love that. I was a Learn to Row coach there for 10 years.
You're kidding. You were probably, oh my gosh, that's so funny. I was only at Mount Baker for the whole Learn to Row thing, and
sure,
then I
went
to Green Lake.
So Bonnie, on a scale of 1 to 10, how has your past rowing week been?
Well, I'm not really rowing on the water right now because I travel a great deal, but I do erg almost everywhere I go, and I have an erg here at home. And now my publishers have realized that if they book me someplace, then the gym should probably have an erg, which, you know, now I'm sort of like, no, you don't actually have to guarantee that. That's fine. Having a day off would be fine.
I love that. We're avid ergers right now because we're training for an endurance row and we're doing this endurance camp. Have you ever heard of Live to Row Studios? They do these online camps. They're so good that they coach you through all the live sessions and you can watch the YouTubes of them later and feel like you're getting coaching also. But we're doing an endurance camp, which is intended for us to get ready to row an 88K row around Salt Spring Island in British Columbia.
Wait, 88K in one
88.
Row? What is that, crazy? I did a marathon erg one time, and I just thought, and at the end of it, we all felt, you know, pretty good. The next day, I think we all just spent the day in bed.
We'll probably also not be moving a whole lot the day after. It's called Race Around the Rock. And it's a relay race. So we are going to be rowing a coastal quad and have teams of six rowers. So we're going to get the chance to go inland a couple of times and swap rowers and coxswains.
We'll do a relay.
But it's a lot. It's a little
Daunting right now. Anyway, but if you haven't checked out Live to Row Studios and their camps, they're really motivational and really good.
I'm writing it down.
Okay, good. So we can't go any further without asking you about what's happening for you tomorrow.
A warm up into your amazing opportunity you have tomorrow.
So what's happening? What's happening tomorrow, Bonnie?
Well, tomorrow I'm meeting the Queen of England, as one does here. I'm just as shocked as everyone else. She's a huge reader, Queen Camilla, and she has a Queen's reading room, and she selected my book for it. And now she has very kindly invited me and some other rowers to come over. So we are.
Oh, wow.
What? Do you know the other rowers?
They're not rowers. They're riders. I'm sorry. Did I say?
Oh, I was like, where did she find random rowers to bring?
Yeah, no, they're all riders. She has several riders in her Queen's reading room. Now, some of these people are dead. You know, Dickens is dead. But I know Rachel Joyce is going, and I'm really excited. She's a friend of mine. And Barbara Kingsolver was also invited, but she's on tour, so she can't come. But yeah, I'm really excited. I think it's a huge honor to get to go.
Where are you going? Are you going to the palace?
Well, she lives in Clarence House. The royals usually live in Clarence House, and that's where this event is. She just started a podcast, which I did with her with her assistant last summer. She is a huge advocate of reading and libraries and access to books. That's one of her favorite causes. And so she's really, I think, the first queen to highlight the importance of reading. And so I feel very honored when she selected my book. I just couldn't believe it.
Wow. Did you get like the wax stamp letter in the mail?
The funny thing was I got this invitation for this event in the mail, and it comes in this envelope and it has Buckingham Palace seal on the back of it. Mm-hmm. And my husband got it out of the mailbox and he said, well, this looks like junk mail. He said it can't possibly be real. And then it was. So I'm really glad that he didn't toss it.
Well, congratulations. What an opportunity.
Very cool.
So to help our listeners get to know our guests, we put you through a lightning round of questions we call the hot seat. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay.
Port or starboard?
Port.
Sweep or skull?
Sweep.
Bow seat, stroke seat, or engine room?
Stroke seat.
Head race or sprint race?
Head race.
Uni or tank and trow?
Tank and trow.
Favorite coxswain command to recede?
Way enough.
Favorite place to row?
Ooh, that's a really hard one. But I'm going to say through the cut, the Montlake Cut on Lake Washington.
Classic.
Best piece of rowing advice you ever received?
Long and strong, and don't worry, it will be over eventually.
Eventually, I like that.
Okay, last one, coffee before or after a row?
Always before. I would never, ever get in a boat with my teammates without having had a cup of coffee.
Your teammates can attest to that, I'm sure.
Yes, they can.
All right, so take us back to childhood in California, and were sports or time outside part of your life as a kid?
Yeah, it was a huge part of my life. You know, my family was very active. There were four girls. My father was more or less a super athlete. He played college football, and he was a very, very big swimmer, and he insisted that we all be athletic, and we all were athletic. I think for him and I, it was mostly swimming. I became a long-distance swimmer because of him. But interestingly enough, when I told my father that I decided to try rowing, he said, oh, no. Better in the water instead of on top of the water. And then he revealed that he'd tried rowing a couple of times and it just seemed too complicated.
Oh,
it is. And that is a deal breaker for a lot of people.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially people who are very like ball stick sport or very like football sport. But I think the thing about rowing that it works well, I think, with runners and swimmers is the meditative quality of it. And everything is so technical.
That's it. You know, that is exactly it. So I find I don't love erging, but I erg nearly every day. And I find once I get on the erg and once I'm past a few couple thousand meters or so, I get into that meditative state. I mean, that's when I'm not really working hard, right? But once I get past the steady state and then I start doing sprints, for me, it becomes very meditative.
Yeah, I think we all get into that zone at some point. Yeah. For me, it seems to be 25 minutes in, no matter what I'm doing. 25 minutes in, I'm like, okay, the lights come on and I'm like, good.
So you started to say that your father really kind of wanted to get you in the water as a swimmer. You've turned out to be quite a swimmer and you enjoy open water swimming. Tell us a little bit about that. And then what was going on in your life when you found rowing?
Well, as for the swimming, I think we grew up going on vacation to Lake Tahoe for a couple weeks every summer. And, you know, Lake Tahoe is really, really cold. And my dad would just insist that he and I, and he started me doing this at 5 years of age, we would go on these long swims. Now, we didn't have wetsuits or anything. I was a very thin child. And I'm just not really sure how I survived. But I can tell you that one time we hiked to a lake, it was still covered in ice. And he said, it won't be that bad. We'll swim to the island and back and you'll be fine. And I wasn't fine. And that was, I think I was about 6 years old when I did that. But, you know, it taught me that you can survive almost anything. And I think he realized we'd maybe overdone it that time. But I think he was very big on the idea of endurance, which is why I think he would have liked rowing, because it's it's all endurance. But yeah, the outdoors were very important to both of my parents. My mom wasn't very athletic, but she was thrilled if he'd take us all away to go play baseball while she could do whatever she wanted. So the way I found rowing was I have never lived anywhere where there was any kind of rowing, no sort of team, no water, nothing. And then we moved to Seattle and I was standing out on the porch of our house looking way out on Lake Washington. And I turned to my husband and I said, what are those people doing out there? What is that called? And you know, he went to school in Cambridge in Boston and he said, that's called rowing. And I said, well, it looks like this would be something for me because I love the water. And I went down the next day to Mount Baker and I took their Learn to Row class. It was really fun. I was really bad. And at the end of my class, there was an eight that had a race the next day. And one of their seats on port, she was sick. And they turned to the Learn to the Row class to my coach and they said, is there anyone in this boat we can stick in? And he said, well, how about her? And they stuck me in this boat. I had never even done a start.
Yeah.
I was so scared. And I kept apologizing to everyone. But, you know, it was the funniest thing. I think I was in four seat. And I said to five seat, I said, how do you do a start? You should have seen the panicked look on that person's face.
You don't know?
Yeah. I said, I'm really sorry. I've never done a start. And she said, well, practice one going up the race course. But she said, just follow the Oral-B, bam, 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 bam.
Got it.
I said, okay, I think I've got it.
Oh my God.
I love that you said you admitted you were not great to begin with. Because once in a while we do interview someone who's like, oh, I was a total natural. I was athletic as a kid. I was a swimmer. I got in the boat. It was easy for me. So getting through those initial days and weeks of kind of saying, oh, this is really hard. There's a lot to figure out here. What was it about rowing that kept you heading back to the boathouse? What got you hooked?
Well, I think after that race, I talked with the Learn to Row coach and he said, you know, I think that you would really enjoy sculling in a single. And he sent me to Green Lake to be coached for that, but I didn't really like it as much as I liked being with other people in a boat. And like I said, I was really bad, but I realized that being in this boat with people, we became this sort of family outside of a regular family. We knew everything about each other, you know, and I love the way in a boat where you may not get along with everyone, but once you're in, you all have the very same goal. You all work together. And as I got better and better at rowing, and when I say as I got better and better, we're talking years. I don't know how anyone just jumps in a boat and learns to row, because the minutiae of rowing could fill volumes. So for me, it was this ongoing lesson. But I was also with all these other people, all master rowers who weren't purporting to, you know, be Olympians or anything, but we all really wanted to be good. And then we started competing and then it got real. Mm-hmm. We became very invested in our training and very invested in always showing up. And you know how Seattle is, you show up rain or shine, and they always say, and at oh dark o'clock.
Do you remember the first time you really felt a boat come together, pick up and go?
I do. I remember it so well. We were in practice and our coach was screaming at us. I was stroke at that point and I could feel the rush in the slide. And he was screaming at us and he was telling us we were giving away our power and on and on. And he told me to take it down to a 17 and then slowly build. And I have to tell you, by the time we finally did this ladder and we got up to this point of, it was probably a 28, I felt that boat lift and go. And you could tell we all felt it. And after we finished this piece, I swear to you, everyone looked around like, what was that? Oh my God. And then of course we tried to replicate it right away and we couldn't. And what we finally figured out was we'd become tired enough to do it right. You know, become tired enough to give up and give in and cooperate.
Stay State Podcast is sponsored in part by Breakwater Realty Group. Daydreaming of new lakes, rivers, and coastlines to row and play on? Consider a home in Maine. The Breakwater Realty Group, brokered by EXP Realty, can help you find your home away from home or relocate to a new primary home with ease. Connect with the team by visiting breakwaterrealtygroup.com and scheduling an obligation-free buying consultation. Maine, it's the way life should be. On the last episode, we sat down with Peter Kerman, owner of Burnham Boat Slings, and his wife, Karen Reynolds. Peter has been the face and voice of Burnham since purchasing the business in 1999. When he's not in the shop or out rowing, he's probably manning the Burnham booth at a regatta. That's where we met him, at Head of the Charles in 2022, just a month after he survived a Widowmaker heart attack. Peter and Karen, both successful national team and masters rowers, are a testament to teamwork as they navigated Peter's health emergency and his rehabilitation and return to rowing. If you missed it or any of our episodes, visit our podcast page at steadystatenetwork.com/podcast or wherever you get podcasts.
In two, we're back with Bonnie Garmus. That's one, two. When a coach recognizes something isn't going right and they say, whoa, whoa, take the rating down and start again.
Yeah.
That I've always noticed that progress happens from there. Give people some time, some space, and rebuild.
Yeah.
So I do this little spiel about the rower life cycle where phase one is don't screw up. Right. So you're just sort of obsessed with don't screw up, don't screw up. And then you progress into the next phase of the life cycle, which is just match. And then the third part of the life cycle is contribute. And so when you feel that relaxed sense of matching and don't screw up, and you've kind of let those things go a little bit, you can actually put some power into it and actually contribute to the boat. You know, this rower life cycle phases one, two, and three can actually happen in one row in 30 seconds. It can happen over an entire practice. It can happen over an entire season. You might spend the whole first 6 months going, don't screw up, don't screw up, don't screw up, don't screw up. Or just, okay, just match. Okay, just match, just match. You know, and then something happens and you're like, you feel safe, you feel grounded, you feel relaxed, and you can be like, let's put the power on and we'll just go.
So, I love that last one, contribute. You're exactly right about that. Mm-hmm. I remember we had a coxswain who used to yell out our names and say, this one is, you know, power 10 for this rower for whatever. And then sometimes it didn't work because maybe we, you know, there'd be animosity sometimes in the boat.
You didn't like that rower.
Yeah. You're like, I'm not doing 10 for no, there's no way. But then our coxswain would start yelling out, you know, I want you to do 10 for these bizarre things, but it worked, you know, to do something, contribute in a bigger way. And it was only for 10 strokes. Anyway, I love that. I'm glad you brought that up.
I love that when a coxswain's like, do this one for two seat. You're like, two seat didn't do anything.
Yes. Yeah. You know what? Two seat can just get out.
Two seat.
Oh, man.
We love to talk about the effects that rowing has on our life. And I want to ask you, how did your life change after you learned to row? Like, how did it affect your marriage? How did it affect your friend group? It has usually a long, you know, effect on people.
Oh my gosh. You know, to this day, my husband still says, oh, is it a rower party? You know, before he'll agree to do something. Oh, is it the rowers? Whenever, you know, we live abroad right now, but whenever we go back to Seattle, I say, the rowers are coming over. And he's like, oh.
I'll be over here.
Yeah. Okay. I'll be in the basement. No, he loves them all, but you know, he's not a rower. And so he just doesn't quite get that. But he recognizes that it's my family. And I think I just did an event at Henley this week. We were raising money to put, you know, economically disadvantaged kids on the water this summer. We raised enough for about 200 more kids be part of this. Yeah. And it was really great. But it's so funny to go to Henley because you walk in and every single person in the room, these are my only book events that are like this, is at least 6 feet tall. But there are a lot of people who are 6'8". You know, they're just huge. Mm-hmm. It looks like you're in Land of the Giants. And one of the things that, you know, we were talking about is just what a family this becomes and how it impacts everything in your life. And after every row, my boat would immediately email each other at work and say, what did you think of the last 500 we did? You know, it was just every detail. I don't know how we kept our jobs.
Tara and I, when we had first met, it was during COVID and we weren't rowing and we missed rowing and we especially missed the post-practice coffee chat. Is that something that you and your teammates would do?
Always. Yeah. I went back to Seattle this time. You know, we went immediately to the coffee place and all the other rowers are there and they're like, oh, you're back. You know, it was just like being home. It was like I'd never been away. And then the discussion turned to the row that morning, you know, and everybody sitting at their individual tables and going, the water just wasn't that flat, you know, blah, 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 blah. I don't know what happened to 3C, but blah, blah, blah. You know, we were down to starboard the entire morning.
And then somebody says, no, we were down to port the whole morning. Exactly. That's my favorite.
Oh, I know.
You're like, I don't know what you're talking about. It was down to port.
Exactly. After row coffee is really important. And before coffee, a coffee before my row is really important for me.
Yeah. Well, we decided to start a global coffee chat, post-practice coffee chat. And so we have it every Friday on Instagram. And we have people from all over the world join us for post-practice coffee, whether you've been to practice or not. We just basically shoot the shit about rowing, you know, in every little detail, you know.
Yeah, all the minutiae.
You know, I always love the part of this coffee group because there's never any shame in any of these groups where you go, what are we eating? Everything.
Yeah. There's just like pastries up and down the table. It's just like here.
Yeah. That's great.
Anyway, we want to talk about lessons in chemistry that we love. It's about a 1950s scientist turned reluctant television cooking show host. It sold more than 6 million copies worldwide, translated into 42 languages, won major awards, was adapted into an Apple TV Plus series. And you have done so many interviews where you approach the book by way of the main character, Elizabeth Zott, but we want to talk to you about a more minor but important character, which is rowing.
To me, rowing is the star of the book, but okay.
Exactly. Do tell.
Yeah. Tell us about that because it seems like it has a life of its own in the book.
You know, I put it in for a couple reasons. One is one of the main themes in the book is a theme of balance. And in the book, chemistry is a balance, the science of balance. You cannot have an unbalanced chemical equation. And rowing, in my opinion, is the sport of balance. We all know what happens when the boat is not set. And then there's a balance of dark and light in the book. But for me, I wanted to put rowing in there because I'm not a chemist and I'm not a cook. And I wanted to write about something that related to Elizabeth Zott's endurance, her ability to get through life. And I think, you know, rowing has a lot to do with perseverance and with endurance, with recovery. I mean, the way we talk about the rowing stroke is a lot about how life itself works. So, you know, we have the catch, the drive, the recovery, everything is a natural part of our day-to-day lives that we don't often recognize. And I think about us all sitting ready at the start line or sitting ready for the first row of the day. And everybody in every walk of life sits ready. And they, you don't really know what's coming. And I really wanted to get that into the book. It was funny, though. I've got to tell you, my editors, you know, they're all wonderful people. I don't work with any rowers. And they were like, why do we need this in here? It's so weird. But for me, I thought it was a really, really important part of the book. For me, the series didn't work for a lot of reasons. But rowing wise, you know, I was trying to explain to them why it would be impossible to imagine that they would put Elizabeth Zott in an eight, an all man's eight. You know, that's just that she would have to somehow do. That would be impossible. But instead, you know, they have her sculling with other women. And I said, so that is not the fight. And an eight is very different from a double or a quad.
Yeah, that seemed a little preposterous. But when Elizabeth finds rowing through Calvin, what was your hope for her? I mean, we talk a lot about couples learning to row, and we have a question about that next too. But where were you hoping that rowing would take Elizabeth?
Well, I really wanted to have the most preposterous thing for me in the book is that he would start her out in a pair. You know, they are completely different sizes and they have completely different strength. And of course, she has not rowed. So he puts her in the pair. And the reason why I wanted to do that was because I think he wanted to be protective of her in some ways, but also he wanted her to experience even more hardship than she was already going through. I wanted to put as much hardship on Elizabeth Zott as I could because I was writing a role model for myself at the time, and I wanted to see what she would do no matter how adverse the situation. And I'm not sure if rowing a pair with a very tall man who's really good at rowing would be pretty bad. I'm pretty sure that would be horrible. But I also wanted her to conquer it because rowing is based on physics. And she was a scientist. So that part of it was really important to me. But yeah, in terms of their relationship in rowing, I also wanted him to be able to give something to her that would teach her this other form of endurance, this other form of perseverance, and allow her to find herself in a completely new way, in an athletic way. And certainly back then, there weren't very many women who were able to do that. And so that part was also really critical for me in the book.
Yeah, it seemed like it was a way for them to connect outside the lab.
Yeah.
But we definitely wanted to ask about the pair because we thought, wow, who would do that?
Yeah, no, it was definitely on purpose. I really wanted him to put her in the worst. I think part of it was him almost showing off, you know, I can do it. You can certainly be in a double and learn balance, but you really learn balance in a pair. That is it. And again, the theme of the book was balance. When we are out of balance as men and women, we flip.
Elizabeth ends up erging voraciously while she's pregnant. Why the rowing machine and not a single for her while she's pregnant?
Well, first she could not row because she could not be a member of that rowing club. She could only be there because Calvin Evans was there and he was the famous rower. No one was going to say no to Calvin Evans. But now that he's gone, you know, no, she can't be part of this team until this doctor who only cares about one thing, that a boat is set, that it works because people are working together. And he believes that she is exactly the right match for that boat because she has learned from the greatest rower, in his opinion, of all time, and because she understands the physics of the stroke. So I didn't want her to go back to the club until she was invited back by a man. And I wanted him to recognize what she brought to the boat.
And it also seemed like Elizabeth was never at 70%. Elizabeth was always at 110%.
And especially for her right then, you know, she did not want to have a baby. Abortion was illegal, you know, like it is again. She really did not want to have this baby. So she was over-erging in hopes that she would naturally abort. And the doctor gives her the bad news that, you know, he basically says, you're actually ensuring the health of your child. You're making your child stronger, not weaker. But that's actually why I had her going at it so hard.
Well, we had this book club yesterday and Kelly Bianchi wanted to know if any of the rowing parts of the book were from personal experience.
You know, I think rowing is one of those kind of deeply personal and yet universal experiences. Once you're in a boat, I think most people know what it's like to sit at the start line and feel very, very nervous and things like that. I guess I wasn't really putting my experience so much because I certainly am not a scientist. I didn't know the physics of the stroke. I had to do a lot of research to figure out exactly what it took to row. My husband is a physicist and, you know, I was going through it with him. I read it out loud and he said, oh yeah, that's right. And all of what you just described is right, which is why I don't row. It is so hard. So no, I wouldn't say any of the pieces are things from my past, but rather a universal memory of it.
A woman named Barbara Sanchez Salazar, she wanted to know what you think of the Apple TV Plus series. Are you happy with how they adapted your book?
Oh, well, adapted is the key word. I didn't write the series. I really wish that I had written the series, but when the book was sold to Aggregate Films and then later Apple decided to be the main producers, the writer assigned to it was Susanna Grant. She wrote Erin Brockovich. She wrote Pocahontas. She wrote a lot of really good things. I have a lot of respect for her. But unfortunately, she had another project that was greenlit. And once you have that, you must go do that. And so she left the project. And then they went through a series of writers and it just started to get a little bit muddled. They ended up at the very last moment, and when I say the last moment, I mean 2 weeks before filming, with a man they hired to just basically rewrite the whole thing. And I think that that was a really tough job. And I do think certainly men are capable of writing about feminism, but I'm not sure that this man was one of those men. Oh, and I think he made it more about a love affair. He made it much less humorous and much less inspirational, in my opinion. I got to read the scripts and I was able to make notes all over them, but our agreement was that he could throw out the notes. And I understood that. That's what you know going in as a writer, as a novelist. You know Hollywood's going to change it. So I just had to kind of live with it, but I wouldn't say I'm very happy with it. But having said that, everybody on that crew, on that team, they were all really wonderful. In Hollywood, 5,000 people work on something at once. When you're writing a book, it's just you.
Yeah, I can imagine it must be very difficult to let go and have someone else run with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if Susanna Grant had been able to stay on, it would have been a completely different series. I think the writer that they hired, he'd worked on The Bachelor, and that's why he wanted to make it more of a romance, which is not what the book is about. It's about a woman standing on her own.
Word that I heard in relation to your book was a steminist. Have you heard this? A steminist.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. Having people like you on the podcast is a real thrill for us. So thank you so much for being here. No matter where we are in our rowing lives, rowing has a lasting effect on us. What's rowing's legacy with you?
You know, the reason why I was able to finish this book working full time and everything else is directly because of rowing. You can't just decide to weigh enough yourself without affecting everybody else in the boat. I had written another book that got rejected 98 times. And believe me, I wanted to quit. But what got me back into it was the rhythm of writing is not unlike rowing, but also just the idea that you are not allowed to quit. You cannot quit on yourself.
Thank you so much, Bonnie.
Thank you for inviting me. I loved it.
We were hoping that maybe this would be a little different than your other interviews.
Oh my gosh, it's so much better. I can't tell you.
It's interesting that we've had two films or two presentations in this year where with Boys in the Boat, where there have been both book adaptations, good or bad, you know.
What did you think of Boys in the Boat?
The book, fabulous. The movie,
it was Hollywood schlock.
Oh my God, it was absolute terrible.
Yeah. And it was just superficial. We didn't get really to fall in love with any of those characters. Oh. It just was so glossy.
It was too brightly lit, the whole movie. I expected grit and dirt and the guys to be like filthy. It was like literally soft focus.
Didn't you feel like you were watching a Hallmark after school special?
A little bit.
Yeah. My mom actually said to me, she goes, oh, Boys in the Boat was snubbed at the Oscars. I was like, That's not how the Oscars work.
Well, the funny thing was, I was at Head of the Charles and I went to a preview of Boys in the Boat with the UW rowing team. So we're all there, yay, Boys in the Boat. And then the movie starts and, you know, people are like, yeah, it's okay. By the end of it, this is how loud the claps were. So I was just there with the UW men and they were so pissed after the movie. So this one rower says to me, hey, are you the woman who wrote that other book on rowing, you know, about the woman who rows? And I said, yeah. And he goes, so much better than this. And I said, but see, my series is super bad. So also, and he goes, right. No, I know, I've heard that too. But he said, this is a, anyway, it was so funny because here the producers are like, this is the best movie on rowing ever. Yeah. And the rowers
were just like, oh.
They're like, yeah. No.
Well, and I thought the biggest offense of that film was the omission of Pocock. And they called him George. Right before the screening started, I saw Jill McCorkle and her husband, Sean McCorkle from Green Lake. And Jill goes, well, word on the street is that they don't say Pocock's name because Wintec made the boats.
No.
Because they're Wintec carbon fiber boats covered in wood veneers. And that was the theory that Wintec said, you can't say Pocock's name.
Oh, that is so funny. I wonder what it really was. I mean, it might very well have been that, but I can just tell you that my own directors and producers saw Boys in the Boat and they said, at least our rowing wasn't as bad as that. And George Clooney sucks. I have great producers, I will say, on the series. And they said, look, everybody in Hollywood knows that George Clooney is the worst director. He can act, but he cannot direct.
Well, yeah. It certainly wasn't key to him for it to be terribly realistic. That wasn't the focus, I think, of his storytelling.
No,
it was also confusing to me because I think he compressed the timeline in the movie from like 3 years to one season that they go from novices to the Olympics. I was like,
yeah, they row three times and go, let's go to the Olympics.
Yeah.
Yeah. The book is so masterful. And I have a little barbershop here on Vashon, and everyone asked me around Christmas time, have you seen it? Have you seen it? Have you seen it? And I would say 100% of people were like, the book is a masterpiece. And that film was Hollywood schlock.
My agent and her husband, they're very close with George Clooney. And she called me up and she said, I understand that you've seen the movie. And so what do you think? And, you know, because I saw it in October and I said, oh, it's terrible. And she goes, Bonnie, I have you on speaker. Oh, he was there.
what did he say?
When you pulled your foot out of your mouth. She was still trying to quiet the room. And so I don't think he heard. She said, well, hold on, Bonnie, he's actually here. And I went, oh, why are you putting me on the spot? Anyway,
awkward.
It was very awkward, but then, you know, it has really just dropped from sight. Yeah. Anyway, really? Well, good. I'm glad we agree about Boys in the Boat.
Ooh, we'll just start every podcast with that. Like, all right, where are you with Boys in the Boat?
I know. Oh, you liked it? I need to go.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. The other side product that it produced, which I thought was really cool, was it inspired the Mohai exhibit, Rowing in the Pacific Northwest, which I still haven't gotten to see, but I hear it's really great. And they rowed the wooden eight down to the Mohai, to the Museum of Industry and Industry. And anyway, it's created some cool byproducts. And now we're seeing the effects of it on, and your show and your book on Learn to Row interest this year. So we're definitely seeing people coming to Learn to Row saying, I saw or read Lessons in Chemistry, or I saw or reread Boys in the Boat, and I want to try it. And
well, that's great. Yeah. I love seeing that.
Yeah, I think that's going to be good for the sport.
Bonnie, this was fantastic. I wish we could chat with you over coffee every day. This would be so much fun.
Okay, yeah. Well, thanks so much. This was really fun.
Okay, bye.
To see photos of Bonnie Garmus and get links to the people, clubs, and events mentioned in this episode, check out the show notes on our website.
Stacey's podcast is supported by RowSource, providing creative design and digital marketing services for clubs, organizations, and regattas. Get the help you need at rowsource.com.
Hey, Tara, I think some listeners might not know that Steady State is more than a podcast.
We should tell them about Friday mornings when we get together for coffee chat. We talk about rowing, racing, technique, and deep dive into things like leadership and inclusion.
So we hope you'll join us Friday mornings at 8 a.m. West, 11 East on Instagram Live. Grab your favorite mug and be a part of the conversation.
Since 2022, Steady State Network has aligned with Allies with Oars to promote inclusion and accessibility for all rowers, regardless of gender identity. We do this by pulling together competitive lineups for major regattas. This year, our amazing team has begun training for Race Around the Rock, an 88K coastal relay race in August around Salt Spring Island in British Columbia, Canada. With your support as an advertiser or patron, we can offer truly equitable access to the event, regardless of financial ability. Show your support at steadystatenetwork.com/allieswithoars.
Ahead in 2024, look for Steady State Network at U.S. Rowing's RowFest in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, July 13th through 20th, and at Head of the Charles in Boston, Massachusetts, October 18th through 20th.
This episode was written, produced, hosted, and edited by me, Tara Morgan.
And me, Rachel Friedman. Tara provides additional audio engineering and is our sponsor coordinator.
Rachel manages our website, social media, and e-newsletter. Our theme music is by Jonas Hipper.
You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Steady State Network, and find Tara at Seize the Oar and Rachel at RowSource. Catch new episodes of Steady State Podcast every other weekend, anywhere you get podcasts.
In two, way enough. That's one, two.